And joining us right now on PNP Network is the legendary Mitch Ryder. You know him, you love him, from Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, with songs like Devil with a Blue Dress On and Sock It to Me Baby. And he is going to be in the Boston area shortly. We're going to talk to him a little bit about his career and about what's happening now. And we welcome Mitch Ryder. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Sorry to interrupt your lunch. I apologize for that.
No problem.
Tell us a little bit, first of all, your born name was William S., was it Levice?
No. Well, it was Levice, but then it got changed by the government because it was one of those Ellis Island deals.
Yeah. You were born with that name. When did you decide to change your name, and how did you change it to Mitch Ryder?
We just took the name out of a Manhattan phone book directory.
Really?
Yeah. About five of them there.
Because I understand that an actress actually used your name. Winona Ryder actually took the name after an album in her father's collection.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. She's said that much, but it's interesting to note that there's also a wrestler from Ohio named Mitch Ryder and a porno star from L.A. named Mitch Ryder, all of which came after I came.
That's funny.
I wouldn't even want to draw attention to him by going after him for it, you know.
So when you were growing up, who were some of the people that influenced the style you ended up doing?
Mostly black rhythm and blues artists.
Guys like Little Richard and James Brown?
Hank Williams was a big staple, too. I really enjoyed his music. It was pretty soulful, you know.
Yeah. So where did you learn to sing, and when did you learn to play an instrument?
I learned all of that hanging out with the guys or school. In school, I was on the varsity choir, so that taught me how to read and write music, and also and to find out what I could do with my voice and what I couldn't do with my voice.
Now, I know that when I was growing up, going in the high school choir wasn't exactly the cool thing to do. Was it cool when you were there?
Well, no, it's never going to be cool. But, you know, it's like a farm club for a baseball team, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where you get your training, and if you have a good instructor, which we did, our music teacher was excellent, and he taught us everything. You know, he gave me all the tools I needed. When I went to New York, he was just very disappointed in my choice of music, rhythm and blues, so to speak, because he had been competing me in sort of classical and semi-classical contest, like county regional contest in the state of Michigan, and I kept winning them, and he said, "Oh, I got an opera star on my hands," and it didn't turn out that way.
Now, when you were in high school, you were playing with different bands. Another one of them was called Tempest, another one was called The Village.
No, actually,
The Village was the club you played at. Yeah,
right. Yeah, and the Tempest. I think that lasted about 4 weeks. What happened was the one of the guys had an accordion, and his mom promised him she would get him a keyboard. And when she didn't do that, then he was kicked out of the band, and the band broke up.
So
we didn't want to do, at least from our point of view, there was nothing rock and roll-y about an accordion.
So then you guys formed Billy Lee and the Rivieras. And I guess the big break for you would be when you met Bob Crewe, right?
Yeah, in the sense that that's when we were in New York and we started getting our hit records. I guess you have to look at it that way. But there's also another way to look at it. I think the big break came for me when I started performing a couple years before I went to New York downtown in this club called The Village.
But of course, with your voice trained for that kind of music, and
wasn't trained.
Well, it was trained in the club scene. It was trained in the club scene.
The club thing. I really had to think differently about music in order to sing rhythm and blues as opposed to operatic music. For example, you push your air for sort of operatic music, all your muscle and tension and pushing for air comes from your stomach, and when you're doing rhythm and blues, it's pretty much all about the throat, you know, and it was two different ways to do music, and I really threw out the window all of the training. That's what made my vocal instructor so angry. Spent all the time teaching me how to do things correctly. And then I his mind, I just tried to...
Well, like William Stiles, what made you the legend you are today, so... Too bad for him, right?
I like he's a good guy.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure he was teaching you the right way to do things. But,
absolutely.
Yep. Now, Bob Crew, I guess, changed the name of the group from Billy Lee and the Rivieras to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, he releases some of your records on his Dynavoice label, and they take off.
New Voice.
Dynavoice, no? New Voice?
New Voice, yeah.
Okay.
Those are the ones that the hits occurred on.
Okay, so it's Dynavoice on that.
Dynavoice.
Yeah, okay. I guess maybe they're all part of that group, Dynavoice, even though they're a different label. But anyway, most notably, Devil with the Blue Restaurant was a huge single, hit number 4, and Sockatimmy Bay hit number 6 in 67. How did that change life for you, all of a sudden having hit
yeah,
tunes?
Jenny Take a Ride hit number 10 in 1965.
Yep, that's right. Jenny Takes a Ride, yeah, in 65. So how did that streak affect you personally?
Not in a good way because of my age. And I think had I been a little more emotionally mature, I probably would have handled my entire life in an entirely different fashion. I think it's really, when you don't have, and we didn't have anybody around us that didn't have some kind of vested interest in making money, there was nobody around us watching out for our well-being. We were in New York, separated from our parents, separated from anybody that really cared about us, and our producer was also our manager. He was also our lawyer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You mm-hmm. know, and he controlled everything. So whatever it is he had in his mind, it was a done deal, and there was nobody really counting the beans. And so we ended up getting screwed for a lot of money.
Hmm. And what?
But we got the hit records.
Yeah, but in the early 70s, after the hits kind of stopped, what was it like for you? Was it a difficult time?
In some ways, yeah, but I did take the opportunity to sort of renew my belief in music. I was always in love with music, and I was determined that I wasn't going to let my bad fortunes in New York City... when I broke up with Bob Crew, I wasn't going to allow that to destroy the one thing that I really, really cared about, which was music. And even though I would never see the heights that I saw under his tutelage, I would still be able to practice and make and earn a living doing something I loved, which is true to this day. So I escaped not a major wound, but certainly a disabling one. We don't live in a castle, but we're comfortable and we're happy. And more than anything else, my family and I love each other, and I love my music. And basically, that's all you can ask for, I think. Good health.
Well, and at 66, you are still out there playing it, which is, I think, did you ever envision when you were a kid that you'd be out there still touring?
No, I did the typical 35 and out routine that was popular when we were growing up.
Yep.
Yeah, if you lived to be past 35, you were really, really old.
I remember those days myself.
Yeah, and you didn't even want to be a part of that crowd.
No, they were old people and, you know, like AARP types. Yeah.
I had a great ride. I was working on the East Coast, somewhere near you. It was one of those huge Indian casinos somewhere up there.
In Connecticut?
In Connecticut, yeah. And so I had the opportunity. They were trying to, they had to shuttle us back to the airport, right? But they didn't have enough shuttles, so they asked me if I would ride back with the Comets, from Bill Haley and the Comets. And, you know, of course, they were like one of the original groups that started rock and roll, right?
Right.
And I thought, oh, my God, hell yeah, I'd love to do that. And in my mind, the night before we left, all I could do was dream about all of the stories I was about to hear, all the great stuff about the early years of rock and roll and the war stories from the road. And so we get in the truck, the bus or whatever it was, the van, to go to the airport. And I just shut up and started listening. And things started coming out of their mouths, like, about Social Security, adult diapers, you know, all the way to the airport, you know. And I'm going, damn, that's not what I wanted to hear.
That's funny.
But they were great guys. But, I mean, what they were talking about wasn't rock and roll anymore, you know.
No. That's pretty funny, though.
It was weird.
Now, you are going to be appearing with the James Montgomery Blues Band at the Kowloon Restaurant on June 9th at 8 o'clock, and it's called Motor City Madness. That should be a fun time.
I would hope so. Yeah, I mean, that band, Montgomery Blues Band, has been around a while, too, and so they kind of should know their stuff. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I know that my band is very accomplished, and we'll see, you know, if they live up to that, too, if they've done their homework and have been applying themselves 100% all this time, it should make for a really, really strong show.
I think so, too, and folks can get tickets, $35 a person for reserve seating and $70 for the VIP ticket, where you can actually meet Mitch and James. The number is 781-233-0077, and that should be a great concert. And when you're out there playing, do you still find yourself playing the hits or the songs now that you picked up that you really like that are kind of newer?
Well, you always have to do the hits. I mean, that's basically what the people remember you for.
Yeah.
But we like to throw in things from the albums that they may have liked that weren't hits. It was a weird time for me because it was a gigantic transitional step in the music industry where they were switching over from single play and single issue recordings to full album recordings with the advent of FM radio.
Right.
So we were like right in the middle of that whole thing where not only did it count what you did as a single, but it also counted as the content on the rest of your album as well. And it was a transition that we didn't really get a chance to explore to the fullest because, of course, the group then broke up.
Right.
So it was an interesting time, comparable to what's going on today, I would say. I mean, nobody that I've talked to in the music industry really knows what the heck is going on right now.
Well, everything's changed. Everything's all digital and download and...
Yeah, but I mean, like, even to get, like, a number one record, I heard, was it about 6 weeks ago, there was a number one record, and it only took 60,000 copies for it to get to number one.
They measure stuff by downloads now, though. I mean, they do the top 40 by downloads at this point.
Yeah, plus they sell them song by song instead of, so.
Yeah.
I know they keep track of it, and I just don't know the formula. Like, I used to know the formula for Billboard for what it took to get, you know, a number one record. I'm not sure I understand what it takes to get a number one record today. Other than that, the numbers, as I just quoted, are significantly smaller.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people aren't buying DVDs anymore or records. They're downloading, and a lot of them are stealing the stuff by passing it along with other folks.
Yeah, it's easy to burn. something.
Yeah, it's kind of sad if you're an artist and you're writing and you're working hard and you're not making the money anymore. You have to make it touring.
Yeah, I guess, you know, they'd have to go to work for a week, and then at the end of the week, when they were supposed to get their paycheck, just have somebody tell them, no, I'm sorry, you don't get a paycheck, but we consider your work as something that we should have for free.
Now, the stuff that was released years ago, the Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels stuff, are you still making anything from that money, from money-wise?
Yeah, but we had to go to court and fight for it. Nobody, you know, all the crooks weren't going to give it up. We had to beat them up in court, and then we won in court, and so we all get quarterly royalties. But, I mean, look at the age of those things.
Yeah.
Plus, we were denied the gravy year royalties from those songs because of the statute of limitations.
Wow.
And I maintain that, you know, if it's fraud, there shouldn't be any statute. The government certainly wouldn't let you off the hook if they thought you committed fraud on anything against them. So I don't see why the same law doesn't apply to the private industry.
That's a very good point. Now, have you guys put together any kind of CDs that you sell on the road with you that you can make money yourselves?
Merch? No, we're not too good at that. We believe in live performance. We believe that says it all. Mm. And in fact, I mean, as good as my studio albums, even the original hits that we're talking about were, they were always better live. And that was pretty much the way they were designed. If you listen to the records, what made them unique in their day was the fact that they did sound like they were live. They did sound like party records. And they did. We actually had people in the studio clapping and singing and jumping and dancing, and we wanted to get as close to live sound as we could. We thought that was something that wasn't being offered up by other groups, and it was true.
So why not take one of your concerts and tape it and sell concert tapes, live tape?
Live. Do that right after the show. I mean, the equipment's there, really.
Yeah, I know.
You could record it that fast and mix it that fast and burn it, and you could sell it at the end of the show.
That would be kind of cool. Then it would be a way to bring some revenue in as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, the revenue is something that everybody's looking for. I think the country is going to take a few years for it to get back on its feet. It's noticeable in the live entertainment arena. You've seen the big tours that have been canceled because they weren't doing what they were expected to do ticket-wise. And you've seen Live Nation drop some over 20 percentage points in revenue.
Right. Yeah.
So the story's out there, the writing's on the wall. Mm. Until this economy recovers, everything, not just the entertainment industry, but everything is going to be kind of like up for grabs. And the problem is, it's a job, but you can't have a jobless recovery. And that's what, you know, the stock market, I looked at it today, and it's fallen like crazy. You can't just keep showing profits on your sheets without creating jobs.
Are you politically involved at all?
I vote, you know. That's about the extent of it.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to congratulate you. I know you were inducted into the Michigan Rock and Roll Legends Hall of Fame as Mitch Ryder in the Detroit Wheels, and then later on your own as a solo artist. Any chance of you guys getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Don't know. Don't care.
No? It wouldn't be a big thrill if that happened?
A thrill? It might be exciting, you know, I would especially want that for the guys, the old Wheels.
Yeah.
I certainly would want that for them. But I've been asked that question so many times, and I'll just give you my honest answer. It's not on the top 10 priority list of things that I need to happen in my life. Like, I consider having my family being healthy, having my family being happy and healthy, having peace, you know, having love in our family, those kind of things. If I can keep those in place, and that's, believe me, that's a hard job.
Yes, it is.
It's a very hard job to achieve those things. Then I really don't care about what some elitist group thinks is my position in my legacy. What I do know is that I've continued to work and give 100%, not only in my live performances, but in my creation of my music. I've been an artist all along, will continue to be until the day I die. I'm working on a lot of projects, and a lot of them are coming out this year. And I've got like 30 CDs out, and most of them people never heard of because they've only been released in Europe. And so in America, I'm practically just, in simple terms, an oldies act. Whereas in Europe, I'm quite contemporary, and I go tour there every year, and I do 2.5 hour shows without intermissions. And that's because I have a catalog that is much, much larger over there than the one I created over here. And that's because my career was put to an abrupt end in New York. So I was kind of like blacklisted for a while. And, you know, I never did have a manager. After I got out of that deal with Bud Prager in the early 70s, I never had another manager again in my life. And I often wonder, well, what would have happened to your career had you trusted anybody enough to have a manager to take advantage of the opportunities that could come to you? And I just, he really spoiled my appetite for managers. So I've operated without that. I've operated without a publicist. And so kind of like really below the radar. And product never got out. But product has been written, performed, and created all along, so I could keep a record of my natural progress and growth as an artist. And right now I'm working on a musical, which I hope to finish by next summer. I've got a book coming out in December. I finally got pinned down the publisher and got the release date for it. And I've got a new CD that was produced by Don Was. He's a Grammy Award-winning producer.
Sure, we've had him on the show, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm happy, you know, in terms of what I'm doing artistically, and we're making enough money to survive, and I don't care what goes on in Cleveland.
It sounds like you got your life together. We're talking with Mitch Ryder, and again, you can see him on June 9th at the Colin Restaurant. Call 781-233-0077 for tickets. Mitch, I look forward to speaking to you again when the book comes out. We'll maybe talk about that. I enjoy your rock and roll books. It'll be a lot of fun. I look forward to reading it. And I thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, you've been a very kind host. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.